Thank you for downloading this audio content from Edinburgh 49. Start with 52 weeks in the year, take away 3 for the fringe, and you have Edinburgh 49. Reviews and arts content beyond the fringe.
So, you take it as a go.
What you're saying.
Be careful of what you're saying. Okay, so I'm sitting here on George Street with the one and only Ian Lavender, who for some reason has decided to do 2 shows this year. How's that working out for you?
Well, I don't know, really. It seemed like a good idea at the time, as most things do. When Tommy Shepherd, I mean, we went straight to Dublin after Shawshank Redemption here last year, went straight to Dublin with it, and Tommy and I were sitting having a drink, as you do in Dublin. You know, it is rude not to. And he just said, do you mind talking about Dad's Army? I said, no, what do you want to know? He said, no. I just thought you might like to do a show at the assembly rooms. I said, yes, please. Immediately. So that was how I was booked here 1 week after we finished last year. I had such a wonderful time last year with Shawshank and the whole thing. I mean, not just the show, I mean, just the festival. I hadn't been to the festival since I was a student. And I just couldn't wait to get back here. So I was doing this, and then I offered this other little play, which I thought was a lovely play, and I thought, it's only an hour. Heavens above. I mean, if you do a show in the West, you've just done a year in the West End, 2.5 hours long, well, 2 1-hour shows, you can do that. Well, somehow it's different. Doing 2 is in the festival is slightly different. I don't know why. It's wearing. It's wearing. I suppose it's all the hills, you know. Because you cannot go anywhere. Well, you can sort of go laterally, can't you, and stay on the same level. But as soon as you turn left or right, it's a hill. Somewhere there's a hill. And at my age, you don't like hill stuff. You don't like it.
So you're basically running on fumes and planning.
Not too many fumes, actually. I wonder which. I'm talking about different fumes, I think. The fumes that you find in places like the Blue Blazer, and so those sort of fumes. I was living on those fumes. Well, it's manic, isn't it? You don't notice what you're breathing in. and at a certain point, you don't notice what you're taking in either.
So I suppose I have to ask. I mean, you were in, you know, one of the all-time great BBC classic comedies, a show loved by millions of people. What was it like being in Yes Minister?
Thank you. You saw the Richard Hearing show. He did that on me last year. Yes Minister was great fun, because Paul was not a close friend, but a good friend, and I'd be working with him. Like, oh, that was terrific. I assume you're talking really about that. What's it called? I have to talk about it for an hour in a minute.
Well, I'll tell you what, because I'm sure you've covered it in lots of places, but the thing I wanted to ask about was It Sticks Out Half a Mile, which was the radio sequel. I really enjoyed that. Why did it only last for one season?
It was originally done with John the Measurer, Arthur, and Bill Pertwee. And then Arthur died. And so they rewrote, restructured it, so it was John the Measurer, Bill Pertwee, and myself. And I'm laughing. It wasn't funny. But I mean, he laughed at it. He thought it was funny. He said, that's bugging your programme. Then John the Measurer died. So going a third time would have been a bit strange. But we did 11 for that winter season on radio. It was great fun, terrific fun. But sadly, of course, John died at the end of it. And perhaps it was becoming a bit of a jinx. And they wouldn't be able to persuade anybody else to be in it.
I had an American friend staying with me just before the Fringe, and I wanted to introduce them to Dad's Army. So obviously I went with, I want to say our American cousin, but that's not the name of the episode. The one where the Yanks come by, your girlfriend gets pinched.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Alan Tilvin, wasn't it? Yes. Yeah. Alan Tilvin played the American. Yes, and he's clinging to my ivy.
Is it? Is there a which episode should I have shown to really demonstrate the comedy of it?
Because what was lovely about it was, you know, within a couple of series, it became almost that you didn't have to do anything about the war. You could do episodes about John the Measurer's long daughter that nobody knew about. You know, you could do an episode about Arthur falling in love with Carmen Silvera. You know, it didn't actually have to be about the war, where the war became wallpaper, really. Background. I think I would actually go for one of those sort of programmes where it's not actually about the war, because I did, you don't have to take any baggage to it. And that's what... Although, yes, it was always... Essentially, it was always about this Home Guard platoon. Of course, it was about the Home Guard platoon in a wartime situation. Oh, and doing silly things in a wartime situation. It was really just seven silly old men, really. So it could have been put in any period. But I think something like My Brother and I, where Arthur plays both him and his twin brother, his drunken brother, was a beautiful one. And it had everybody coming in their characters, in the characters within the... And within the format of the war, you know... Of this wastrel and this man who's mannering, who's trying to do something positive.
He was right here.
Next, I think that would have been probably a good one. Yeah.
When you look back now, and you know you're looking at a certain amount of distance, do you see the characters getting
that far? Can you really?
Or do they start to become more real? And you think, oh yes, Captain Mannering once told me that. When actually you need to remind yourself that that wasn't.
No, I don't. I mean, no. wouldn't life be simple if you could just lose yourself like that? Because Private Pike didn't have my mortgage. they became... We worked together over 10 years, and longer than that in some cases afterwards, you know, and remained friends throughout everybody's complete lives. It wasn't just 10 weeks a year. We didn't live in each other's pockets, but I mean, we knew each other... We became lifelong friends, and we were friends. And it's. But I think people sort of find it hard to accept that we ended up all as great friends who had the great good fortune to work together. It turned around from being 10 people who got to work together to, in the end, 10 people who loved working together. And nobody was ever on a retainer. Arthur was never on a retainer. It was all done on, you know, are we doing, phoning David, are we doing one next year? I've been off of so-and-so, what's happening next summer? Well, we won't be going till September. Okay, right. And it was not ad hoc, it wasn't an ad hoc basis, but nobody was on a retainer, nobody was kept to a contract in that way. And everybody just wanted to do another one. It was just a lovely feeling. It wasn't like going to work. It truly wasn't like going to work. You did arrange to meet a load of friends at 10:30 in the morning.
And I mean, it's not like going to work, but obviously you've been working ever since. When you get a script through the post or you get a suggestion through the post, what's the first thing that you think about? I mean, is it the mortgage?
Do I get to sit down very quickly? Do I get to sit down within 3 minutes of walking on stage? That's a good part. Can I get home at night because I don't live in London? I want to go. I like going home. And some shows you just can't get the last train, you know, so you have to be in London. I did live in London for over a year doing Sister Act, but... great fun. Yeah, great fun, but I long to get home.
Is fun the main thing you look for when you're thinking about taking a job on?
Oh, I think so now. I am of a certain age, and so there are things like pensions in place and that sort of thing. I'm not saying, well, I suppose yes, we could live without me working, but that's a beautiful thing. We don't actually retire. The business retires us, really, just by using us less. And then you sort of realise, oh, nobody wants me. perhaps I have retired. No, it now is... It's a happy position of, actually, I don't want to do that. I won't do it then. There's no having to do that. You know, my boys are well and truly left home. I mean, they've got their own children, and... So that sort of, you don't have to provide in that sense, it's just us now. And so it's choosing, like, I say, 51 weeks ago, over a pint in Dublin, Tommy saying, do you want to do it next year? Yes, please, booked. Because I want to do it.
But this isn't your first time in Edinburgh. You said that you were here as a student. Do you have any recollections of that?
Well, we came up as students, no, not really, except we hitched up from Bristol, tried to cobbled together some sort of show out of our audition pieces, did it on the grass verge somewhere. So, in the days when the Fringe was a garage somewhere, you know, three or four sites, when the festival was a different animal in those days. And so really, it's sort of three sleepless nights and two long journeys on lorries, you know, up and down from Bristol. We've been to the Edinburgh Festival.
How do you see Edinburgh year-round as fitting into the national touring circuit? Is it an important stopping-off point?
Do you mean as a tourist or as an actor?
As an actor.
I've worked here many a time. And in Glasgow many a time. And, Dundee, Aberdeen. Perth, absolutely lovely. And is he going to say anything nasty? Of course he's not. No, I've always loved. I always loved Edinburgh. I do have lots of friends here in Edinburgh. I've never been to the festival. Just never been to the festival. I've been here in other plays and televisions and radios. My wife, who's worked several times at the Conservatoire in Glasgow, and so when I went there finally, she said, "Oh, you'll love it." No, I won't. I can't compare with Edinburgh. Well, then I fell in love with another city in Edinburgh. Oh, I mean, just two totally contrasting and wonderful cities with different characters and different buzz, different atmosphere. And I love them both. And so I do actually come back quite often because I've got so many friends up here, yeah, just to visit them and be here. I think I've been to Edinburgh four or five times in between last year and this year's festival, just to see my friends.
That's a rather nice way to end it out on. I suppose we'd like to end these interviews by saying, what should people go and see after they've seen Don't Tell Him Pike?
Because I'm doing two shows, I haven't seen anything yet. I'm waiting for my wife to arrive tomorrow, and we're going to cram a pile of things in in the last four or five days. Well, of course, they should come and see the other play as well, You're Never Too Old, with Ruth Maddock over at, I forget where it is, I only know how to walk there, the MASH House in Guthrie Street, yes. That, of course, but it's a race between the two shows afterwards. The one that we are booked, we absolutely must go and see, everybody I've known has seen it, said it's wonderful, is The Elephant Room, which we're going to see on Saturday night. So looking forward to that. So I've got to pace myself at my age and do two shows and see another. That's a whole day for me.
Ian Lavender, thank you very much for talking to us at Edinburgh 49.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
You've been listening to Edinburgh 49. For more reviews and arts content throughout the year, visit edinburgh49.com.